Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:03 p.m. the Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 18th. It's Martin Luther King Day in the USA, so the US markets are shut, but the rest of the world is open. And I thought this was a fun chart, perhaps, to ruminate on. It gives us the price-to-sales ratio, which bumbles along for a long time and then starts to really pick up in 2020. And it's at highs we haven't seen in years. But I thought it was good that it also gives us a historical peak from back in February of 2000. So it's not like price-to-sales ratios on their own are a sign that the bull market is about to end. What it does help to highlight, though, is that we are in the beginning of the mania, that there is a potential that price-to-sales ratios, even though that they are extraordinarily high, will go even higher. They may even exceed the peaks from back in 1999. So that's something that we need to pay attention to. There's a big question for, I think, a lot of investors is what to do. And as we look around the world and we look at everything that's happening in terms of the coronavirus and the response to it, and then the cacophony of voices that are either supporting the rollout of vaccines and saying that it's absolutely imperative that it occur, or the people that are simply saying that it is way too risky to use unproven technology or to give a liability waiver to pharmaceutical companies. And obviously everybody makes good points. So the one thing that, and then of course, that introduces uncertainty about what's going on in the world. When we see social unrest and the palace of democracy in the USA being overrun by protesters, well, that's obviously an additional risk factor that it's a source of uncertainty where people start to ask big questions. Well, then we also see the uncertainty in the stock market, where we had the profound decline in March of 2020, the incredibly impressive rebound, and lots of people asking, well, what's going on? Well, I thought that this was a good chart. It's the difference between the yield on the UK gilt and that on the FTSE 100. It got up to 500 basis points in early 2020. Now that's a lot. That means that stocks in the UK yielded more than 5% more than gilts, and today it's less than 300 basis points. So we've had a meaningful rebound in stocks. We've also had the government bond yield pretty much going sideways. Veteran subscribers will remember, and when I say veteran, I mean you'll probably have to have been with the service for more than a decade to remember hearing this, because it was a refrain in the big picture long-term audio for a really long time, which is that a secular bear market is defined by a generational long period of PE ratio or valuation contraction and rising dividend yields. Well, let's just think about, well, what did the UK market do from approximately 2000 onwards? It mostly went sideways. And over that period of time, we've seen a very significant appreciation in the yield. The yield, particularly relevant or relative to gilts, has steadily increased for a very lengthy period of time. We can see a very different environment on Wall Street. If we compare the yield on the S&P 500 to the Treasury yield, well, then we're presented more with a range over the last decade. But the differential overall has been contracting significantly over the last 20 years. So arguably, what we've instead seen, we have not seen, on Wall Street at least, rising dividend yields. And contractions and valuations. Instead, what we've seen instead over the last decade has been a generational long period of valuation expansion and compression of dividend yields. That's what we would characterize as a bull market. So this chart gives us ample evidence that what we've seen instead has been a bull market, where we've had yields compressing, valuations expanding, and valuations are getting progressively more expensive, and yields are still very low, even though we've had upward pressure on yields. So now we can look at this chart, and we can also highlight the fact that every time it gets up to about 100 basis points, we start to get trouble. And that was certainly true after the credit crisis. So we had a wobble in 2013, and that coincided with the taper tantrum. We had a wobble in 2018, and that coincided with the period of quantitative tightening. And then we had this incredible contraction going all the way down to 200 basis points. So that was this chart, of course, is pushed around the other way. So it gives us the 10-year minus the yield. So in fact, that was a 2% advantage in yield for stocks over bonds. And now it's coming back down again. Well, the big question, of course, will be what happens when it surmounts the 0% level? Because this is obviously a very big decision for investors. Will they then start to buy bonds with the expectation that they can then get a positive real yield, or at least a positive yield relative to what is available in stocks? Or will they continue to support stocks until we get back up towards that 100 basis point level? The reality is that we may have a bubbly environment evolving. There's certainly evidence of extraordinary enthusiasm among retail investors. When we have people with over 100,000 followers on TikTok saying that they don't need to get a real job, they don't need to apply for any form of gainful employment because they can make $10,000 or $20,000 a month by trading stocks on Robinhood, well, that's usually synonymous with the mania. When people give up their normal jobs and think that the easiest way to make money is day trading, that's usually synonymous with retail investors gaining, coming into the market after what is effectively a 13-year bull market and thinking that they're early. So they're not early. And we are in the mania phase on Wall Street today. But manias don't end on their own. When we think about how do bull markets end, there are two important factors. The first is supply. Bull markets don't end because demand evaporates. Bull markets end because supply overwhelms demand. So we're definitely seeing that big private equity firms are now exiting positions. We're seeing a large number of special purpose acquisition companies coming through. This is the modern equivalent of the spike in IPOs we saw in the late 1990s. So there is no question supply is increasing, and the withdrawal of supply through share buybacks is no longer as powerful a phenomenon today as it was in the years up to 2020. Now, there is the potential that buybacks might start to increase later this year, and most particularly because when we think about what corporations have been doing, they've raised a huge amount of cash. They have taken on a lot of debt. A lot of that cash was earmarked for the provisions against the economic contraction as a result of the pandemic and the response to it. They may use it to buy back shares at some point in the future in the case that they don't need that money. But of course, that's not a decision in the first half of the year. It's potentially a decision for some time out there in 2021 or 2022. Then the other factor that kills off bull markets is interest rates. So as we look at what yields are doing, what we're seeing is that investors are beginning to think that inflationary pressures are mounting. The 10-year yield is back above 1%. It has broken its downtrend. So there is this scope here that we are in the foothills of a move higher in yields, lower in prices, and that it will put upward pressure on interest rates eventually. But the Federal Reserve has clearly stated in plain English that they are not going to raise interest rates. They're not going to go for negative interest rates. And then, of course, they have the additional complication of the impact of higher interest rates and yields on the finances of the US government. And of course, that's a significant challenge as well. So we may be in a lower interest rate environment for a prolonged period. What we can definitely think about, though, is going back and looking at some of these long-term charts for other markets, because the FTSE 100 has been going sideways in dollar terms since 1999. In local currency terms, it broke out and then came all, it's now come back to test the 7,000 level. And we may see some additional consolidation here, but if it can push back above 7,000, well, then I think we can conclude we're back in a medium term or even a secular bull market environment. And there is no country in the world today with more change going on than the UK. Having exited Brexit, then the world really is its oyster. It's only a question of the vision of the ruling party to, in fact, enact the kinds of policies necessary to drive growth into the future. If we take a step back and just look at all of Europe, well, then it's also been going sideways for what feels like a secular period of time. It's 20 years since European stocks were able to push on the upside, and the Euro Stoxx index is now pushing through the 400 level. Well, as we think about where are we in terms of the psychological perception stages of the bull market, well, we're in the third psychological perception stage for Wall Street, and most particularly for the technology sector generally. When we think about the UK and Europe, then I think we could logically argue that this is disbelief. There is nobody believes that the UK and Europe have a bull market potential, and yet they are breaking up and out of extraordinarily long-term bases. And then we can think about Japan, where it has clearly broken out of a first step above its 30-year base formation. So, yes, there is a short-term overbought condition, but it is unlikely we're going to see the Nikkei trade back below 20,000 again. When we then think about the countries in Asia that tend to do well when Japan does well, Taiwan is like a high beta version of the Japanese market, and the TAIEX index has clearly broken up and out of its own 30-year base formation. Now, of course, it is highly weighted by a small number of companies like Taiwan Semiconductor, which has gone vertical this year. So, or in the last year, so there is obviously scope for some pause and consolidation at the minimum. MediaTek has also done extraordinarily well. So that's an additional point that when we think about how it's doing, these are obviously companies that are doing extraordinarily well. They've certainly benefited from the demand for semiconductors. Over the course of the pandemic, the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is probably a better way of comparing the performance of these companies in Taiwan and South Korea. And the South Korean index now also looks like it is susceptible to some additional consolidation. But the big picture is that it has broken up and out of what is a profoundly long range. The Vietnamese market is one of those countries that has got an emerging manufacturing base. It's an emerging middle-class country as well, but it did really very well in containing the spread of the virus, and it's right back in the region of the peak from back in 2018. But again, it's another that is somewhat overbought in the very short term. When we think about a recovery in commodity prices and the growth of the middle class, well, then the Indonesian market is also back in the region of its peak from back in 2018. But it is worth considering that it was the ASEAN sector did most particularly well in the immediate aftermath of the credit crisis. And then when the dollar started to strengthen, the pace of the advance moderated. So when we look at this in US dollar terms, it's a very different chart. That really, it was after the dollar started to strengthen, then Indonesia pretty much stopped rising. So when we think about what the outlook is for emerging markets and perhaps also Europe and the UK, what happens in terms of the dollar is going to be particularly instructive in terms of the judgment whether we're in fact going to have a new secular bull market. The dollar continues to steady here in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming now for over 6 years. So could it yet further unwind the short-term oversold condition? Absolutely. Is this still a downward bias-oriented market? Yes. There is the clear scope that it is going to sustain a break down out of this range at some point in 2021, and that will be lighter fuel for a migration away from US assets overall. That's the big transition that's likely over the course of the next couple of years. That weakness in the dollar will make assets outside of the dollar universe much more attractive. And then the commodity index has clearly broken out and continues to do well. So there's clear scope that what we're looking at is a global reflation, and it's being funded by deficits everywhere, but most particularly in the USA. It's going to help to foster growth everywhere else. There's likely to be a very significant infrastructure build, potentially for the Green New Deal, and that is likely to benefit a whole host of commodities, but probably different ones from the commodity-led bull market that started in 2000. That was really about coal and iron ore because of China's vociferous appetite for steel. On this occasion, it's probably going to be much more about battery metals like copper and lithium. So that is quite possibly where the big commodity bull market is likely to come from over the course of the next few years. Of course, gold led on the upside, and it has been engaged in a process of mean reversion over the course of the last while. Commodity markets were open today, so gold prices have steadied in the region of the trend mean. And I do think that this is nothing more than a process of mean reversion and a consolidation in the region of the peak from all the way back in 2011. If that is indeed the case, then we've probably seen the worst of the pullback, although it's hard to argue yet that the pullback has in fact ended. But if the $1,800 area holds, well then that's a higher reaction low, and that is the minimum to conclude that we're coming to the end of this consolidation. When we have competitive currency devaluation coming through all over the world, then it is reasonable to conclude that assets that cannot simply be lent into existence should appreciate in value. Gold is obviously one of those. Commodities more generally also fit into that category. The oil price has continued to recover despite the fact that there is a short-term overbought condition. Then when we think about where we are in terms of what governments around the world are going to do, I think everyone has had a shock to the system. They all want to engage in reflation. They're not worried about deficits. Eventually, deficits are going to become a problem. In just the same way that they became a problem for Gordon Brown. If we go back and think about what the New Labour government did ahead of the credit crisis, they hired a large number of public sector employees. They massively increased deficits. They spent with abandon. And they then ran into a significant problem during the credit crisis, where the banks were in a bad position. The government found itself in a position where it had way too many employees and it made very outsized spending commitments. And now we have a rerun of those same kinds of policies being engaged in everywhere. Well, when interest rates do begin to rise, then that is when problems will start to emerge. But I do think, though, that we are still at the beginning of the bubble phase, not the end. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.